You're joining We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And we're We the People Radio. Dang, you got me again.
Yeah, if you just stare at Bill and don't say anything. He gets a little nervous. It's actually pretty fun.
Staring at me and stuff.
Okay, so happy Father's Day.
All right, yeah, there you go.
That was your present.
Oh, man, I am so lucky.
Yeah.
I'm a lucky guy.
Your other gift is our sponsor.
Yes, our sponsor. Our sponsor this hour is Team Power, John Deere Kubota dealer here in Shasta Lake, California. And if you need a tractor, go see them. They got some great deals over there on Kubota and John Deere. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard. And their phone number is 226-9226. They're a full-line dealer. They can do parts, service, sales, the whole bit. So go see them. Team Power.
So if you're having a sassy day, will they talk smack to you?
Oh, yeah. Okay. They can talk some smack over there, let me tell you.
I just want to know if there are any other services they provide.
Oh, no, they got game.
Okay, good
one. Bring it.
Oh, no, someone's already calling.
Uh-oh,
I didn't mean it. Complaints. That disclaimer at the beginning, I'm like, oh, how stupid is that? Oh, whoops. I guess that's why they have it. It's for people like us.
Of course.
Because our opinions are ours and sometimes other people's. Nobody
else would dare claim them. That's their loss.
I lose consciousness partway through when it sounds like I'm going to do something really bad. It kind of makes me want to, actually.
It provokes you.
I was just going to say it. There's some sort of provocation.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. We have Claire and Lyle on there all at the same time. Jeez Louise.
This is an exciting morning.
You know what? This is the first thing this morning, except for walking the dog. I managed to do that with no, you know, didn't
trip and fall.
No, didn't mess that up at all.
I was
pretty much fine there.
Yeah, good.
But, okay, so that being said, no one will be surprised that we do not have a clear topic for today. We do have two awesome guests, however, who could take us anywhere they'd like. So that being said, I should introduce them.
Yeah, who are our guests?
We have had both of them on before, so you can find previous shows with both our guests. But we have Dr. Lyle Rapacki on with us. He is Sentinel Intelligence Services. And so, let's see. My screen is like too small. I don't know. I've gone blind this morning. I was trying to work on the stupid music, and then after I got it all done, it didn't save anything in the clips, and now I'm blind, so I have nothing to show for my efforts. Unbelievable. So let's see. Lyle can't help me with my vision, but he is a behavioral analysis and threat assessment specialist.
Well, you're a threat.
So if I put anything bad on, you know, Facebook or whatever, I guess they'll come after me if the Facebook police don't get me first. And he used to advise the Arizona members of their legislature on threat assessments, but now he moved. I don't know if he wants to tell us where he moved. We know. I think they're all cattle, no hat.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. I had to think about that. I'm like, wait, okay, how does
it go? It's
hard
to say it wrong.
What does Chuck Schumer say? Yeah, that's your hint. That's your hint for the day. Let's see, and Mrs. Claire Lopez, she is the Vice President for Research and Analysis at the Center for Security Policy. She's a senior fellow at the London Center for Policy Research and a member of the Board of Advisors for the Canadian McKenzie Institute. And she's done... We should have had that song, I've Been Everywhere. God, that was one of the ones that I cut that I fumbled at the end. That would have been perfect. That's Claire. She has a BA in Communications and French from Notre Dame College of Ohio and a Master's in International Relations. And she completed the Marine Corps Officer Candidate School in Quantico. And, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
She declined a military commission to join the CIA.
There you are.
There, rest my case. We can talk about anything.
You don't know what she did except, though, so just don't get too smart.
And if we did?
Yeah. Yep. You're done.
Yep. I have to kill you.
You're all done.
All right. So, Lyle and Claire, you've been so quiet.
We're afraid to jump in on this one.
This was like a careening car going down a hill.
Well, Aaron and Bill, it's so nice being back with you. I thought maybe
away.
I'd upset you all.
Come back.
Because it's been a while since I've been on.
I know. We've only goofed off on the telephone. You're too far away from your speaker, though. You sound like you're in a tunnel. Careening down the road has turned into a tunnel. It's not a good progression.
Okay. Let me see if I can correct that. Can you hear me now?
Oh, beautiful.
Caller, can you hear me now?
We were just talking about that. We listened
first
to the radio.
Caller, long time listener.
Oh, I listen to that one at night, you know, when people call in, can you hear me? I'm like, oh, stop
saying that.
We have a rule. If someone calls and says, can you hear me, we're just going to hang up on them.
No, we thought we would say, hello, are you there? Can you hear me? Hello? Oh, I think we lost them.
That's right. That's what we decided on. I already forgot. It was like 12 hours ago. Oh, my gosh.
It's so funny.
And in a sad sort of way. And happy Father's Day to you.
Thank you both. I'm here just to support Claire. Claire picks the topic, and I just follow Claire around.
Well, last time we told Claire, what do you want to talk about? She goes, well, ask me a question. We were like, oh, no, dead in the water already.
Oh,
we ran aground before the first
Claire
break.
It is like she's the star, and I just kind of mop along.
Yeah, there you go. So, Claire, what are you doing today? Are you...
Well, thank you very much for having me again. Of course, it's really good to be on with you and of course with Lyle again.
That's our bonus.
What am I doing today? I'm working. What else would anybody be doing on a Sunday afternoon?
I know.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, the problems never sleep, do they?
Well, neither does the backlog.
Oh.
No, it doesn't. I'm sure we have plenty to talk about. Boy, what's been going on lately is just craziness.
Yeah. So, where do you guys want to go with this?
Well,
ooh, that was a big deep
Claire,
breath.
Let me talk to Claire on air. You guys don't listen.
Claire and I haven't Everyone talked. Talk amongst yourselves.
Claire will guide us also. There are, of course, continued animosities toward Trump, not only internationally but domestically, because in part he's not part of the club or the establishment, so no matter what he did or does, it's not going to be accepted, and they're doing everything they can to discredit him, but also to neutralize anything he does accomplish. I liked during the campaign when I heard a statement that the media was so opposed and the establishment was so opposed to Mr. Trump that if he walked across the Rio Grande, they would say, see, look at that, he can't even swim.
Yeah, exactly.
So no matter what he does, it's going to be reported in a negative light. And I set it up that way because what he just did with Korea is historical. No other president had even talks like this, much less reached some conclusions that have been announced, and I think others will be in the next 30 days. But I say that also because what he's working on across the nation here domestically to secure our borders, to bring sovereignty back and nationalism back, meaning to support the United States, because we are an exceptional nation. That doesn't mean we're better than other people or more special.
Yes, it does.
But we are an exceptional nation based on how we were formed.
In a better way.
And our beliefs.
More exceptional.
Yeah, and our belief systems and our foundationals are unlike any other nation in the world. So as he begins to restore pride and the United States as a good guy compared to the bad guys, the bad characters in the world, he's being criticized for that also. The G7 summit that just was held where he announced that he's not going to back off the tariffs, that it's ridiculous for Canada, for instance, to charge the United States 320% on milk and other products, is an example of what's happened over the last 10 years, not just under Obama, but under Bush, where the United States has been taken for a ride, and we're supposed to be accepting of that when Trump came in and said, no, not anymore. And so all of these are coming to the forefront. And then on top of that, we have the Islamic issue still domestically as well as internationally. And I know, all kidding aside, because I kid Claire all the time, I think we've worked together for almost 10 years now, I think. But Claire can speak with great authority into any of those topics that I just chose because of her contacts and her working with members of Congress and other individuals.
Well, we've got to take a quick break, but when we come back, let's touch on that, because I think you're absolutely right. I think he upset the apple cart domestically with everything he said. He just isn't doing business as usual. And now that he's stepping out and implementing kind of the same thing with our foreign policy, they're all in a big uproar over that, too. But that's just the way it's going to be, and I think it really upsets them. So we'll touch on that when we come back.
And you are listening to We the People.
You can join us online, We the People Radio. No Sunday afternoon is complete without James Brown on Father's Day. And, of course, the only other song I can find is Walk Like a Man. So there we go. That's our Father's Day medley for you. The rest is just the usual hodgepodge. Oh, my goodness. So you are back. We're listening to We the People. We have our guests,
Dr. Lyle Rapacki and Ms. Claire Lopez. All right. So, Claire, over to you.
Yes. Happy Father's Day.
Well, thank you.
To all the fathers out there, Lyle especially. What's the question?
She does this to me every time.
Could I jump in and then I'll just sit back and have my coffee and Claire will do the rest of the show because I know she can carry it. One of the other things that I think Mr. Trump has done is he's demonstrated, and I love the music, Walk Like a Man. We have not had
a real man
in the White House for quite a while.
Yeah.
And now Mr. Trump has come in and he's showing real leadership, and people both domestically and internationally don't know how to treat that. They don't know how to deal with that. But one of the things I think he has done, and I'm setting this up so Claire can bring it on home, I believe, is show what real leaders do, especially if their nations are under attack. And many nations have been by this Muslim so-called Islamic migration. It's all part of a big setup, and Claire can speak to it very, very knowledgeably. But I've noticed that with Trump, even though they're all taking shots at him, his leadership seems to be catching on. Just this week, in fact, just the other day, the chief immigration officer or immigration chief for Germany was discharged by Angela Merkel because he was allegedly taking bribes to approve 1,200 asylum seekers. And now Angela Merkel is demonstrating real leadership and tightening down on all the regulations on the Islamic movement into her country. Well, that's a bunch of garbage, but she's fearful that she's going to be replaced later this week by the interior minister.
Absolutely.
She definitely is a conservative and a sovereign individual. Same thing is happening down in Austria. Austria has just called for a national alert because they're running defense drills in anticipation of 80,000, quote-unquote, migrants from various Islamic countries to pour into their nation, and they've said enough. That's it. So they, I believe Switzerland's just done the same thing, and a couple of other nations are now starting to step up to say, wait a minute, this is all part of a bigger sham, and we're losing our culture and our nation. And I think, in one sense, that is a ripple effect of having a president who knows how to be a man and knows how to be a leader and knows how to protect the very nation that he was in charge. He was charged to protect. So with that, now I'll have my cup of coffee and listen to Claire because I know she'll do a better job. I will.
You're up, Claire. What do you think?
About Trump? About Europe? About Germany?
About whom? About his stance with immigration and how it's really kind of having a ripple effect with other leaders.
Yeah.
I mean, Merkel is under fire, and she knows she's under fire because
she's been under fire for a while, but there hasn't been anybody
too many
to
in
jump
Germany,
in.
And they're not happy over there. So
yeah, I think it's a very natural, if from our perspective anyway, belated pushback by the people, because these people in these countries of Central and Western Europe, you know, they're the ones bearing the brunt of that illegal, those migrant populations flooding into their neighborhoods, you know, next mm-hmm. door to their homes, at their kids' schools. And it's taken a lot longer than we thought it might have, but the pushback has begun. Yes, definitely.
And if you look at England, I mean, they're more or less under attack as well. I mean, they're putting people in jail for speaking out, and I mean, people are not happy about the amount and the level of influx with the Muslim population in their countries. And you're right, it's watering down their own culture. That, you know, there's a possibility they won't get it back if they let it go much further. And isn't that what's happening?
Well, and it's not just the fact that it's a Muslim migrant problem, but for example, you mentioned Britain, where Tommy Robinson,
right,
champion of the British people, patriotic Britain, you know, has been thrown into jail, essentially for speaking out against the Muslim rape gangs, the Pakistani Muslim
right.
rape gangs that he is seeing, everybody is seeing, all over Britain, that have mercilessly targeted young white British girls for many, many years, while the authorities, the police, the social services, the judiciary, prosecutors, judges, turned a blind eye. Why? Because they didn't want to be accused of racism.
Right.
Well, what race is rape?
Right.
Of your little girls.
Yeah.
And when people allows that to happen, as Tommy has pointed out, that people is finished. You allow hostile alien men to rape your little girls en masse for years and years without doing anything about it, even though you know about it, that's a people that's finished.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy's in jail right now because he tried to call attention to that.
Do you know what the numbers are on that? Because I've heard different reports, but I keep hearing it's in the thousands.
Probably tens of thousands.
Well, that's unbelievable.
Of victims we're talking about here.
Yeah, and they try to bring that up and end up in jail. That's crazy.
Well, you know, it's happened here in the United States, not to that degree, but for the Claire, guide me or correct me on this. But I think, and in fact, I think you and I discussed this case, Claire, when it happened several years ago in Arizona, where the father of a Muslim dad went ahead and did an honor killing on his daughter.
I remember that.
In the parking lot. He ran her down. Do you remember that, Claire?
Yeah, absolutely. You're talking about the case of Noor al-Maliki, the
That's
daughter.
Correct.
Of an Egyptian family,
and that's not the rape thing, but I there was something that Claire was saying about the losing of the culture. When you have that much blatant, heinous acts, you've already pretty much lost your country. Well, in the United States, we've had pockets of this. It has clearly kept away from the media. The media does not cover it. And our elected officials are afraid to stand up and do their sworn oaths to preserve and protect the Constitution. And so it's infiltrated in the United States, but not at all near the level that Claire was just describing. But it's worldwide. Wouldn't you agree, Claire?
Well, what you know, the case in Arizona there was an honor killing, and it is law enforcement, local law enforcement, that's the front line. Against those kinds of abuses within their communities, But without the backing of their, you know, political, in some cases, appointees, meaning city councils or mayors, you know, or the elected officials of the state, law enforcement finds itself at a disadvantage to confront, you know, these kinds of crimes: honor killings, domestic abuse, female genital mutilation. These are all the kinds of crimes that are being seen for the first time, but increasingly across the United States, in places where immigrant or refugee populations have been allowed to come in without what President Donald Trump on the campaign trail called extreme vetting. Extreme vetting means that you question closely those who want to immigrate into this country for their suitability, and not only suitability in terms of is their upbringing, is their worldview, is their moral and ethical framework compatible with a Judeo-Christian-based constitutional order that we have in this country. So not just those kinds of questions, but also will that newcomer, incoming migrant, contribute to American society intellectually or with special skills, an educational level that will permit that kind of contribution to our society? These are all the kinds of questions that very much need to be asked, certainly here in the United States, when we're talking about perhaps reforming and overhauling our immigrant and refugee resettlement programs, but that clearly were not asked, were not even part of the equation in places like Europe and especially Germany that took in like 1.5 million migrants from 2015 till 2016 alone, with disastrous consequences, an absolute explosion of violence, attack, rapes. Why? Because those questions were not asked, and it was only clear afterwards to the poor people of Germany and these other countries that these incoming Muslim male fighting age migrants did not hold the same worldview, Weltanschauung, they would say in German, the same principles of society that those populations in Germany hold and that we do.
Right.
But if we're going to avoid what's going on over there, we need to start thinking about this.
Well, and
there was no intent. Claire, again, correct me, because Claire's the subject matter specialist on this. All fun aside, I mean this sincerely. We've worked together on a number of things, but she is the subject matter specialist. So correct me. These so-called immigrants coming in to the United States had no interest, and many of them declared so, of being part of our culture. They intended to come in and move toward already established, at that time, teeny tiny communities of Islamic adherents. And so what was being developed and what has now been developed in several pockets across the United States are small communities on their way to establishing Sharia law in those communities, bypassing the Constitution of the United States, bypassing city, state, county, and state laws in the states that they are in, and introducing and adhering to Sharia law. And we have, it's already happening. It's something that still doesn't want to be discussed in the United States. And so the Democrats and the social Marxists and others are up in arms at the thought that Trump would ever get involved in this form of immigration to stop people from coming in, much less asking them, do you intend to support the United States and what do you bring with you? And they talk about the United States being a melting pot, and we've always lived on immigrants. Well, yes and no. I mean, the immigrants in the past waited to come to the United States to be a part of the American culture, not ignoring or blocking out their history, the Italians, Polish, you name it, everything.
Sure. No, but
you're
on the other
part.
On the other side of the break, I want to know how much you think that that smoke screen of, you know, kids being separated. Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say, do you think that's a smoke screen? Obviously, I do. We're going to come right back with our guests, Claire Lopez and Dr. Lyle Rapacki. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
There's a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. Every move he makes, another chance he takes. Odds are he won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man,
pointed out to the spirit in the sky. Where I'm gonna go when I die. When I die and the name is at rest, I'm gonna go to the place that's the best.
When we broke there, we were talking about folks coming to this country and
assimilating our culture. You know, that's why they came here, was to be a part of the American experience. And now it seems like they come here and want to bring their culture with them and bypass our
demand
laws.
That we join their culture.
That's right. Yeah. And that's not just a Muslim thing either. I mean, we're seeing that.
No.
You know, here on the West Coast, we're seeing that with the Hispanic community. You know, the Salvadorans coming here and bringing a lot of their problems with them.
But I want to know what you guys think about this latest, I don't know what we call it, thing, kerfuffle, with the kids. What's that smoke screen all about?
Separating the kids, yeah.
Well, what we're talking about is a long-standing law,
right,
that says when adults are confined to an adult jail, that is not a place for children. And anybody in the United States who winds up in an adult detention facility is going to be there without their family. That's just simply the law. You don't bring your entire family, children, with you when you get locked up in a U.S. detention facility. So that's perfectly normal and natural. And if families don't want to be separated from their children, well, don't commit a criminal act by crossing our border illegally with those children.
And that's the same with...
It just seems so obvious.
It's not just crossing the border. I mean, it happens every day with just, you know, Americans that break the law and end up in jail. They don't get to bring their kids with them.
And so I
don't understand why it's any different with folks that break the law by coming to the country. How is that any different than Americans breaking the law and going to jail and being separated from their kids? I mean, it's the same thing, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's been my privilege to work with legislative leaders the past 8-9 years in several states. Arizona was my home state. I just moved to Texas. But working with legislative leaders in Texas over the last few years, but also Arizona and New Mexico, and I name all these states. One of the things that they have struggled with is to maintain the sovereignties of their states as well as the sovereignty of this nation. And one area that they've also struggled with is how to combat or how to address, how to respond, you pick the word, to the liberal argument of what you all are now discussing. Because if they talk about maintaining our borders, then they're shown to be rude, crude, and insensitive to the poor people in fourth, fifth, sixth world countries. I know there are none, fourth, fifth, sixth world. Some of these countries are so depleted, yeah. But the fact of the matter is, the liberals have went out years ago, and this is all documented, and posted billboards, and they sent out flyers and radio announcements from Mexico City further south into South America even, explaining how to get into America and claim sovereignty, how to claim political asylum. So our own government under Obama went ahead and promoted a way for these people to bypass our own system. And what most Americans don't realize, because they don't deal with this every day, is that no country, and Claire, jump in here, please, but no country is as rich, as big as the United States is, can handle 3-4 million immigrants a year. And that's what America has been dealing with. We cannot sustain that. And that's what they want us to do, because the end result, the end game, the goal is to collapse the United States from within. And I know, people sound like it sounds conspiratorial, but you know something? I'm old enough now and tired enough and grumpy enough. I really don't care what you say. You start to look at the facts. You start to look at what's not being published by design, and there's a game plan to literally bring in not just Islamics, but people in third, fourth, fifth world countries to inundate this nation and to collapse it from within. We cannot sustain a steady growth, and we have been for the last several years, of 3 or more million people a year. And that's what's been happening. And that's by design. It's well orchestrated. And anybody who stands up against that is lambasted, character assassinated, or even worse. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask Claire if she agrees with the idea.
You're being blown
that,
off, Lyle. Oh, sorry.
We're being collapsed from within. I mean, I think that's a valid point.
Well, I think it's probably, in the United States case, less about sheer numbers or numbers per se of those coming in, and more about whom is it we're permitting to enter, again, with or without that extreme vetting. In other words, if we were permitting in even the numbers that Lyle's talking about per year, and every single one of them was committed to abjuring every other allegiance to every other legal system in the world, to embracing and committing to obeying only the Constitution of the United States and the laws derived from it, committed to learning English in as quick a period of time as possible, coming with the credentials, intellectual, educational, societal, that would enable them to quickly become productive members of our society. That means getting and holding a job, paying taxes, and so forth. Then it wouldn't be quite the issue. The issue is not that we're allowing in such large numbers of people like that I've just defined, but rather that we're being flooded, like Europe is being flooded, by people with next to zero educational or skill credentials or commitment to assimilate into our society and to obey our Constitution and the laws derived from it.
No, that's a great point. I was reminded of just recently the pizza delivery guy in New York that was detained. I heard a really good point on that. He wasn't illegal. He was under a deportation order, I think from way back, from like 2010 or something. And he was delivering pizza without a driver's license, without insurance, and yet when he gets detained, there's this outcry that, you know, he was a productive member of society. He wasn't obeying our laws. He didn't come here and assimilate. He didn't come here, I guess, to be a pizza delivery guy. I mean, he's bypassing and sidestepping our system, and I don't know what the answer is. How do we vet these people and make sure that they're here to obey our laws and to become part of our society and not, you know, say one thing and then do another? Is there a way to protect ourselves from that?
Sure. It's really not that hard. It's not rocket science. You come up with a completely revised set of entry criteria and questions that would be asked by very well-trained, they're not now, but well-trained consular officers, CBP, Customs and Border Patrol officers, ICE officers, Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers, all of whom would need to be trained on things like, well, the American Constitution.
Right.
And how to ask, a revised set of questions, and then something about behavioral indicators to understand whether the answers being provided are likely to be truthful or not. This isn't rocket science. This isn't hard. But you have to ask those very specific questions. Do you stand here right now and abjure every other legal system, your allegiance to it, and pledge only to loyalty to the U.S. Constitution? Yes or no?
Yeah.
I mean, we don't ask those questions.
Yeah, that's the crux of it, is we don't ask those questions anymore. And so this is why we have...
Well, they don't want to display the... I mean, you know, we have people who think we shouldn't display the American flag because it's you know, aggressive to other
people. Well, yeah, you shouldn't have to ask those questions of people.
What?
That, you know, it's offensive to them.
When we when we come back, though, I'm curious where you guys think this whole asylum thing fits in, because that seems to be the latest... you know, hey, I'm just going to go there and claim asylum, so everybody's rushing the border and... wants to be an asylum seeker.
When we come back, could I finish up on something Claire just said about questions?
Okay.
All right.
All right. Make a note. Lyle's got needs. Oh, wait. It's Father's Day.
Right.
Lyle, that is awesome. We can't wait.
I'll submit another check for $2.50 if I can get my question.
See if we can boost you to the front. Oh, yeah, happy Father's Day.
This is a tough crowd today, isn't it?
Come on, Lyle, walk like a man. All righty, we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, where everyone gets abused.
You always find you got to saddle up your boys. You got to draw a hard line. When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon. We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
You got your own special song?
This is a tough show today, isn't it?
Man, I'll tell you. I didn't put her up to that.
Yeah. You know, Bill, it'll probably be many more months before I get to come back on now.
Imagine how happy I am. It's Father's Day.
Yeah, but what about that show we planned where we're going to talk about nothing?
Oh,
we had like a half hour conversation about doing a show about talking about nothing.
I don't know what we're talking about, but one day Aaron and I were talking a couple of weeks ago, and I said, you know, our conversation today on this phone call is kind of like Seinfeld's. It's about nothing. He said, why don't we do a show about nothing? I go, oh, don't tease me. I would love that. We get on for 2 hours and just talk about nothing.
Talk trash.
Everything and nothing all at once.
Oh, yeah. Claire raised, as she always does, some really incredible, insightful about the questions that are no longer being asked. Our authorities are no longer asking. Well, I just sent Claire and Aaron, I just sent to you five questions that I put out to a number of elected officials that I'm advising or providing some briefings to, and I just sent them to you, so maybe you'll look them over, and if you think they're valid, you would post them for your reader. I'm sorry, your listeners and readers. There's five questions I've asked a number of these elected officials across the country, who they talked to me or asked, you know, my views on things, and. What I said to them is, I think at this election time, you would be wise to start to force yourself, if nothing else, to ask and answer these own questions here. Number one, what is the proper role of government? As an elected official, what do you see, what do you believe is the proper role of government? And then I put down a quick answer for them to consider, and they build on it their own. But my answer was, our founders were clear that government was to reflect the will of the people. It is the people who give government its authority. And when elected officials no longer represent the will of the people, they no longer represent what our founders established as a foundational principle for the formation of our government. Question two, as an elected official, excuse me, you will be required to take an oath to uphold and preserve the Constitution of the United States. When was the last time you took a serious look at the Constitution? Can you identify one or two areas where the Constitution is being violated today? I won't read my little answer there. Maybe you'll post it. Number three, what are your views about public debt? What is your opinion of using debt and how it should be extinguished? And my quick answer there as a suggestion was, our forefathers warned about debt. It should be paid by the generation that created it. Any public official who endorses expenditures adding to debt should be viewed most cautiously and confronted. Question four, what is your view on unalienable rights stated by Jefferson in the Declaration? And my quick answer there was, our forefathers understood, they publicly proclaimed, and even had their collective beliefs written into our founding documents, that our rights are given by our Creator, not by government. Our inalienable rights cannot be taken by man without coming under the judgment of God. Your candidate's answer to this critical question, is what I was saying to people who read this, will shed light on his or her philosophy of governing, as well as their principles and values. And then the fifth question, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. And I gave a quick synopsis of an answer there. I think Claire is absolutely right. Not only should these questions be mandatory for our, be it Border Patrol or border agents, our immigration people who are screened, all these immigrants, but there are some serious questions that need to start to be asked of those who are running for office. And I got to tell you, I don't really care, and I've said this to the candidates I'm advising or at least providing some counsel to, I don't care if they're running for school board, Parks and Rec, or what. I think somebody better start asking some damn serious questions of those that are going into public office, because slowly, steadily, seductively, we've got people moving their way into elected or public serving offices who have no interest in supporting the Constitution that our forefathers gave us.
And I think that's been the long plan, Lyle. I think they've recognized that if they can just stay in for the long game and get people in these positions, that's where they're going to influence public policy and change the laws and turn us into somebody that we don't want to be. And you know, getting back to what Claire was saying about the questions we don't ask people coming into the country, I think we need a revised list or some kind of a plan to ask these people some real simple questions when they come here about what kind of citizens they are going to be. Because I don't think we're doing that now, or we wouldn't have this problem.
I would agree. This is going to be another whole show. I'm just at a point where I've been very, very privileged, and Claire has in her life also, to meet and associate and to advise elected officials in various capacities, city, county, state, federal. And in my opinion, this is just me, not your show, not anyone. There's my disclaimer, I guess, or just me, myself.
But you're a dad, so you're reflecting on your children. Just remember that.
Okay, thank you. And my dog, which really does make a difference. Just the voices in my head and me believe that it's well past time that we start asking some very straightforward and requesting, if not even demanding, some very straightforward answers, not the bullet point talking answers that were given every election year. I remember John McCain. We're not supposed to talk about him because he's on his deathbed. But every 6 months prior to an election in Arizona, he would come out and he would start talking tough and border security and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And he didn't mean it. He didn't mean it at all. He did not mean it. And I mean that by saying, look at the bills he's passed. He and Ted Kennedy were one that tried to get this immigration thing going in 1986, I believe it was, 85, bringing in the immigrants without going through all the rigorous screening. So, you know, he would come out 6 months before an election and really start talking conservative, balderdash. We need, as the people, we need to start asking some very serious questions of our elected officials. And I don't care, again, if it's for city council, parks and rec, or whatever, because the Islamic faction are moving into those areas. Claire can jump in here, and I'll be quiet for another set of coffee or cup of coffee. But they're moving
Claire,
in, Bill, you're right. They've decided to wait us out in the long term.
Uh-oh.
I'll be quiet now.
we have about a minute till the break. So any thoughts before you send us off to the news? I posted Lyle's rant, by the way. It's all on there.
That was my rant. Claire, jump in and save me.
No. It sounds it's exactly right. Questions that need to be asked of our elected officials are not so very much different. In some ways, yes, but from questions that need to be asked of intending incomers or immigrants.
Yeah, and well, in California now, we're giving illegal immigrants driver's licenses and letting them hold office. So pretty soon, yeah, those will be the exact same group. We're doing our part to be on the cutting edge of that.
Which state in California? Because I understand you guys are going to split the three states now.
Yeah, because we need more Democrats in the Senate. So we're going to send you six instead of two because we've done such a good job with the two we already have. Wow, what a hater. I am such a hater. Okay, so we get to go to the news now. Just in case you're not sad enough, we're gonna go learn what's going on in the world for this hour that we've been missing. But you are listening to We the People. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We are going to be back with another hour with Claire Lopez and Dr. Lyle Verpacki. It'll be fun. You'll like it. So hang in there. We'll be right back. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our
and here on Father's Day.
Yes, our sponsor is Team Power. John Deere Kubota Tractor Dealer up in Shasta Lake, California. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard. Just a little bit
to Triplet View. Yeah,
we not
don't have
Triplet
that.
View. We that's a
only
dead end.
Twin
yeah,
View.
Yeah, just south of Reading, about 5 miles. And you can reach them at 226-9226. Everything tractors. I mean, they can get it done for you. Give them a call, and they'll make you a great deal. Team Power. And with that, we were talking with Mr. Rapacki, about some of the things that we're not asking folks when they come into the country to be citizens. We pretty much just let them in and give them a card and hope that they do a good job. And
I'm going to know what Claire thinks about this, this business of asylum. What about this whole asylum thing? How much of this do you think or know? I mean, could go with opinion or fact, whichever you'd prefer.
Yeah, because we're covered on that. We have a disclaimer.
I know, yeah. The beginning said that we're basically crazy
we
people,
want.
And we've muscled our way in, you know, and they have no control over us during this time period. Yeah, it's a very long disclaimer. It makes us really sound like nutcases.
Yeah, we're going to say something bad.
I know.
Yeah,
kind of makes me want to, actually.
Yeah.
But, That's a bad road to go down. All right, back to Claire. All right, so I'm kind of curious, how many of these other countries, since you've studied this a lot more than we have, how many of these other countries was this a big asylum push? Because that's what it looked like from here, that's how they overwhelmed all these countries in Europe was, oh, you got to let us in, you know, we need asylum. Is that what they're doing to us?
Well, it's a little bit different in terms of the geography, of course, because...
Right.
A lot of the migrants that pushed on into Western Europe over the last few years come from places a lot closer to Western Europe
Middle
East, Southwest Asia, North Africa. And a lot of that migration was instigated by upheavals, war, chaos, in those places. Interestingly, we've published recently at the Center for Security Policy, www.centerforsecuritypolicy.org or securefreedom.org, take to the same place, a paper, an occasional paper, written by the very brilliant Jeff Nyquist and a co-author from Romania. And the paper describes you can find it at our website. That's what I mean to say there. It's published there. It describes the potential intentionality of some of the really indiscriminate aerial bombardment, for example, by Russia in the Middle East battle space of identifiable known civilian areas with the perhaps intent of spurring outflow of people, refugees fleeing the area and on up into Europe. Now, what we can say for sure, what we know is happening, is that in many cases of the Middle East there, where Sunni population, Sunnis comprise the majority of the opposition to Bashar al-Assad's murderous regime in Damascus, Brotherhood included, Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, other militias. But in places where they've been pushed out and maybe become part of that refugee flow, literally Iran, the jihad regime of Tehran, and its proxies, its Shiite militia proxies, Hezbollah and others, are literally resettling Shiites in those places. So you're looking at not just an ethnic cleansing of areas, but also the resettlement, the repopulation of those areas by Shiites in order to create a situation on the ground that is dominated by Shiites and out of Iran. Now, all that is a little bit by the by when we're talking about the influx into Europe, but that geographical proximity was my point, that that contributes to much of what we see there. And we've even, again, I'll go back to the center's publications, we've even called that flow a hijra. Hijra, of course, referring to the year 622, migration of the early Muslims with Muhammad out of Mecca to Medina. And that flow out of the Middle East and towards Western Europe might rightly be called a hijra. It's the title of a book
a slim monograph, really, that was published by the center a couple of years ago, written by Ann Corcoran. Look her up. You want to know more about the refugee situation, refugee program, resettlement program in the United States? Go to Ann Corcoran. Refugee Resettlement Watch is the name of her blog. And in any case, Hijra to America, the title of that monograph that she wrote for us at the center. So when you're talking about a migration that's comprised demographically, overwhelmingly, of young, military-age Muslim men, that really can be called a hijra for the purpose of settling areas in Western Europe that are not predominantly Muslim, but that they would like to make so. And if you look at documents like the Muslim Brotherhood's explanatory memorandum, of course, they refer very openly in that 1991 document to the settlement process, the civilizational jihad. So it's all woven up in things like that.
Claire, tell me again the occasional paper. I found the page. Tell me the man's name again,
please. Let me get the exact name for you. Just so that you can get that for your listeners.
Yeah, I was going to link that on there because that's useful, and you guys have a lot of information on there.
Mm-hmm.
More than I could just scan and pull out. It's like, oh, there's a whole lot of topics on here. You guys
It's called Russian Strategy and Europe's Refugee Crisis. It's an occasional paper published late April this year at the center's website. The authors are Jeff Nyquist, and his co-author is Dr. Ancha Maria Cernea, his Romanian co-author.
Okay, perfect. I will link that.
Hey, Claire, would you say that what you just described, especially going back 622, moving into the European country, was that just a form of invasion?
Yes.
I'm asking the question because, say again?
Quite simply, yes.
Okay. I wasn't setting you up for anything because I was intrigued because I know we've talked about what's happening today or in the present tense, and it seems like they're following a formula, if you will. Correct me from my own education, but it sounds like they're following a very similar formula. Am I close? Or?
Yeah, no, exactly so. When you look at documents like the Muslim Brotherhood's explanatory memorandum, or others like the document they've come to call The Project, which was a document seized by Swiss authorities during a raid on the senior Muslim Brotherhood villa owned by Yusuf Nada in Switzerland shortly after 9/11, so that was around November 2001. That document, The Project, lays out in quite a bit of extensive and explicit detail exactly how Islam intends to conquer the West. That's what they wrote in that document. The Muslim Brotherhood wrote that. And invasion is part of it, overwhelming a society with outsiders coming in who do not hold the same principles, values, traditions, certainly don't have the same history. It's all laid out in those documents, and then we see it actually happening.
We talked about this also, Claire. Coming across the borders, I remember when I first talked to you about this, 8 years ago, I think it was, we were able to recover bits and pieces of documents out in the Arizona desert of Islamic movement, and based on those documents, we saw bits and pieces of their game plan to subdue a culture or a community, and to bring strife, but also to move in and change a culture. So it's very similar, is what I'm hearing you say. Is that correct?
Well, we have their documents in our hands. Some of it's seized by law enforcement. others published, and well, they told us exactly what they're going to do, and now they're doing it.
Yep.
We have difficulty believing people who just tell us that they're going to come in and wreck everything, and then, of course, we spend a lot of time denying that. We're going to come right back with our guests, Claire Lopez, and for you, Lyle, on Father's Day, Dr. Lyle Rapacki. We had the lovely Walk Like a Man, but now we're going to have the alternative for you, just in case you want to be multicultural. We'll be right back.
Slight feet up the street, bend your back, shift your arm, then you pull it back. Let's hard to know.
Oh, hey, oh.
Strike a pose on a Cadillac. If you want to find all the cops, they're hanging out in the donut shop. They sing and dance.
Oh, hey, oh.
They spin the club rooms down the block. All the Japanese look there, and the party boys call the Kremlin. And the Chinese know.
Oh, hey, oh.
They walk the line like the Egyptian.
Doing. I was all motion focused today.
Yeah, you were too. Dancing like an Egyptian and running through the jungle.
Lyle walking like an Egyptian.
Jesus, Father's Day. What's going to happen when I get home? Hey, Lyle, you were talking about the border. One of the things that I've always been a little curious about is these folks, you know, travel hundreds, sometimes thousands of miles to cross the border and come to America. They don't have two nickels to rub together, and so they come to the United States, but somehow magically they come up with $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 to pay a coyote to cross the border. How does that work? And wouldn't that be some kind of giant red flag for the authorities if somebody paid $5,000 to get here? There's something else going on there, isn't there? I mean, either human trafficking or who knows what. To pay that kind of money, and where does that money come from?
Well, that's a multifaceted answer because, you know, of course, they may save up for several years to collect that amount of funds to pay the coyotes. They're also involved in drug trafficking themselves or in some form assisting the cartels so they can earn some extra funds. Yes, sex trafficking. There's a whole host or a litany of things on their sorted menu to collect the funds by which they can then turn around and pay the coyotes to bring them up to and through the border. So mm-hmm. not only do they come up through Mexico, which doesn't touch them, by the way, so that's another show,
right.
And then through the border, but then they're brought into safe areas. Oh, my gosh, well, we've documented 75 miles, even 100 miles into the United States, and then they're discharged and sent their ways.
Right.
So there's a multiplicity of ways that they're raising those funds. But you're right; they're paying mostly now. It's $5,000 a head to have somebody escort them into the United States. Once they get here, though, they have a system that they're well versed in on how to collect assistance. Anywhere from medical to food to even short-term housing. A lot of the religious groups were receiving federal funding to assist, quote-unquote, all these immigrants coming into the United States. And by that I mean they were given food stamps, housing, medical, I mean, just going down the list. They were given cash. They were really set up to be taken care of for at least the first 6 months being in the United States. I've noticed that Mr. Trump went ahead and cut all that out, and wouldn't you know, within days after that happening in this last budget cycle, a lot of these religious groups have gone out of business. They're not supporting the quote-unquote refugees anymore. Mm. And that's in part because the religious groups were making monies themselves. This is not my opinion. One day I had two senior legislators in Arizona so fed up with a ecumenical group that they brought the ecumenical group into a private meeting in the state capitol in Arizona to question the executive director, the state chairman, and a couple of others. I think there was five people. And they asked if I would be there, and Claire knows this well because she sat across from me. I asked if she would participate, and she graciously said yes. And I got annoyed, if you remember, Claire. I got annoyed at the lies. I got annoyed at the executive director and then I think the state chairman of those religious groups lying to the legislators and senior staff. And I really nailed them. But Claire did an absolutely brilliant job asking some very tough questions that they just couldn't answer or they refused to answer, because if they did answer, it would show their complicity to being paid for every person they helped, quote unquote. They got a percentage. Do you remember that, Claire?
Yeah, I remember very well. And in fact, the questions that they were most stumped by were questions relating to vetting and security, background checks.
Yes.
They didn't want to talk about it. They didn't want to be involved in it. They didn't want to have anything to do with it. They basically shrugged it off as somebody else's responsibility, and their job was only to resettle people. They didn't care where they came from, what their background was, what
Correct.
They believed, what they carried with them in hearts and minds. None of that mattered to them at all. This is Catholic Charities. We could name, as Ann Corcoran does at her website, Refugee Resettlement yes. Watch, others involved in this racket, and believe me, it's a racket. Lots of them, faith-based groups, the Methodists, the Lutherans, the Hebrew Aid Society, and on down the list, in addition to Catholic Charities, but it is certainly a money-making racket, and they could care less about security.
Well,
one of the reasons this was brought up at that time is because there was a piece of legislation that was being considered, and that legislation had to do with, while these people are under your care, in other words, you're sponsoring them. Claire, correct me, because I remember I asked that executive director, is it not true that you are sponsoring these refugees? And she said, well, yes, it is. And during the time you sponsor them, it's about a six-month period. She said, yes, sometimes 9 months. And I said, during that period of time, you feed them, you house them, you give them funds, you do, and she said, yes, 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 yes. During that time period, the one senator said, if they commit crime or crimes, should you, meaning Catholic Charities, Methodists, and all that, should you also be held accountable? And there were crickets in the room. Remember that, Claire?
Yeah, absolutely. They want nothing to do with any responsibility for who these people are, where they come from, or, again, what they bring with them in hearts and minds. And that's what's so key. It's not necessarily only just about where they come from in terms of which countries or which battle zones or what have you. It is what do they carry with them in hearts and minds. And they just do not want to be bothered with that. They don't care what they come here with, intending to do, not intending to do, what their beliefs are, what their ideology is, what their allegiances are. Or even, whether they turn out to be intending criminals. So their responsibility financially is for 90 days. It's 3 months or
wow.
so. 90
well,
days.
Well, I'm looking at
and after that, the entire responsibility falls on the local municipality, region, state, which in our current legal system under federal law have no input and no say-so in the process of bringing in and resettling refugees. The states and the counties, the municipalities, towns, are cut out of the process. It goes directly from the United Nations Human Rights Council, which
sets up the refugee camps and processes those who are intending refugees, and then deals, literally deals, are made with each nation state, in our case with the Department of State, and then the Department of State in the U.S. contracts, literally contracts, by the head with local aid agencies, VALEGs they're sometimes called, voluntary agencies. These are NGOs, yes. Non-governmental organizations, which profit massively from the U.S. government, not just from the by-the-head cost payment, but also from various grants they're able to tap into from Department of Education, Department of Health and Human Services, and so forth. Their responsibility, though, as I said, lasts for 3 months, 90 days, after which everything for the rest of their lives of these refugees being dumped into these towns, which have no advance warning, they're not part of the process, they're not allowed to say no, their unfunded mandate is to take care of these people for the rest of their lives, health, education, housing, language assistance, job assistance, training, you name it.
Right.
And that federal system has got to be changed.
If I remember correctly, Claire, that once they dump them into these cities, and they literally are, guys. I mean, we're cutting through this. We're not being politically correct here. They dump them. They dump them in already predetermined communities that they've chosen. They, meaning the charities that are under contract to the federal government, and receive a percentage per head. But once they dump them into these communities, the communities are then responsible for taking care of it. And I thought, Claire, that some of the communities were paying the religious charities a stipend to stay on beyond the 90 days. I may be wrong on that, but I thought
in general, what happens is that those municipalities are the responsible party for the upkeep, the maintenance, the livelihood of these refugees that they never asked for, never participated in discussing with the U.S. government, and had no say-so in who comes, how many, how fast, with what, you know, rate of flow or anything else, whether they're housing situation, whether their schools, whether their clinics and hospitals would be completely overwhelmed. It doesn't matter. They don't care.
Thanks for that explanation.
That's what they do.
That really answers the question. I heard the other day they were actually referring to these folks as undocumented Americans. So that must be when they reach that title, once they get dumped into the community.
They're documented in a different way. I mean, refugees come here legally. Through the UNHCR, again, United Nations Human Rights Commission, that then work with the United States State Department. It's done legally. It's not that it's illegal. It's just that it's unfair. It's
right.
Not fair.
No, it's totally unfair.
Those Americans, those local communities on whom the responsibility is going to fall to take care of these people after 90 days.
No, you're
brutal.
Right.
We have to take a really quick break. When we come back, I'd like you to address. I went to Ann Corcoran's refugee resettlement. God, I just looked at it. What the heck is it? It's Refugee Resettlement Watch. Okay, I was right. Her article from today shows a picture of predominantly, you know, working age men, 20-something age men. And here comes, she said it's another shipment from Australia. Australia rejected these asylum seekers, and now I guess they're coming here. Most are men from Afghanistan, Pakistan, Burma. And so I guess we have to have this whole boatload of men. What happened to the whole women and children
thing?
Let's
talk about that, because those are undocumented Americans right
there.
Well,
they're going to be our new neighbors. Ann pointed that out here. So anyway, I'll link that article. But, yeah, let's hit that when we come back. You are listening to We the People. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
A generation lost in space with no time left to start again. Fire is the devil's only friend. him on the stage. My hands were clenched in fists of rage. No angel born in hell could break that Satan spell. And as
Well, let's take care of some business.
No, maybe Claire. Either one of you. What do you guys... How often do we take these boatloads of people from elsewhere because the other places look at them and go, eh, we don't want to do that.
And don't we have a choice? I mean, somebody had to say it's okay to
get how come the Australians get to say no?
Yeah, the situation with Australia is unique. Australia, being a continent-sized island... has a little easier time, you might say, of keeping out illegal migrants than countries that are, you know, land connected to places where migrants come from. And so Australia interdicts intending migrants coming from places up further north in southeastern Asia, like Indonesia, for example, Malaysia maybe, interdicts them at sea and takes them to islands in the Western Pacific where they are held. Now, what happened under the Obama administration, the United States agreed that we would take some of these unwanted immigrants that Australia would not permit to enter its sovereign territory, that we would take them, and we'd settle them here in the United States.
Wow, that's nice of us.
Typically, every year, this is up to Congress, a number is reached, a limit for incoming refugees, but other categories of immigrants too. But this was a separate situation with these immigrants from Australia.
So are they vetted?
Yeah, these were their, you know, don't want them, they're not coming to Australia, but here, you can take them. And Obama said, okay, sure.
Okay, so at that point, are they going through any kind of a vetting process, or are we just, they're on the boat, so we get them?
Well, one hopes they're going through a vetting process, but what if they fail it? Where do they go?
Yeah, exactly.
So where do we send them? Back to Nauru? Nauru is one of those islands where they were held. After we pledged and promised to Australia that we were going to take them.
Right.
Anne would be the one who would be looking into that, especially. I'm sure she is.
Are we looking at... those agreements that we have, you know, with the UN and stuff like that, why are we still doing that kind of thing? I thought that was kind of Obama stuff. Shouldn't we be getting out of all
States
that?
The United States has taken in a set number of refugees through the UNHCR for many, many, many decades. This is a standard. I mean, this is a process that we've set a number which has gone up. It's gone down over the decades for forever. It's not just under Obama. This is United States.
Didn't it go way up under him,
though? A certain number of refugees through the UN resettlement process every year.
Well, so I guess I don't have a problem with if we agree to take a certain number, that's all fine and dandy, but they still have to qualify, I would think, in some way.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
They do. The problem is that the process of qualification, of validation or of vetting, background checks, is not what we here among us today would call extreme vetting, and I suspect probably President Trump would not either.
Mm. Wow.
Well, you know, it's been my experience, and Claire and I have discussed this, and we saw it in some of the cases we've worked, and she just mentioned it, where they have different categories. So let's say you're only allowing 1,000 18 to 20 year old males in. That's your category. That's your limit. Okay, so they allow 1,000 of them in. Well, then they allow 1,000 of 18 to 20-year-olds from Sri Lanka only. Well, then another 1,000 from Afghanistan. Then another 1,000. I mean, they've got all these criteria that when you're all done messing with the whole thing, you're looking at 300,000, 500,000, whatever, because they've got them locked into different categories to hide what they're actually bringing in. So
right.
They can actually stand before the cameras and say, no, no, no. The limit by the UN agreement is only 1,000 18 to 20-year-olds from Sri Lanka. And that's all we brought in.
Well, that's fine. I guess I don't have a problem with that. But maybe we need to have the vetting process. Well, I do, too.
But I
think the vetting process needs to be done.
There is no vetting process.
Well, that's what I mean. It needs to be done.
We found that out. There is no vetting process.
There is a vetting process. It's just not as rigorous as we would like it to be. They're not asking the questions that we talked about earlier.
Right.
Let me give you some numbers for the fiscal year 2018.
I'm going to disagree with you.
First October 2017 until 30 December this year, 2018. Our refugee resettlement limit number is 45,000. In 2017, we brought in fewer than 54,000. Year before that, 2016, we brought in 85,000 refugees. So this is where the numbers have been fluctuating more or less over the last few years. The places they come from also vary from year to year. But, for example, last year, the number one place of origin was the Democratic Republic of the Congo. After that, Iraq, Syria, Somalia, Burma, Ukraine, Bhutan, Iran, Eritrea, Afghanistan.
Why don't we vet them over there before they get
here? We do. The United Nations, the UNHCR, does.
Okay.
The first initial screening is done by the UNHCR. The United Nations High Commission on Refugees.
Except Australia. You know, the folks that get on the boat on one of these islands, are they vetted before they get on the boat?
No, I'm talking about United Nations refugee resettlement.
Okay.
Typical way that refugees are taken into the United States. As I said, the Australia situation was different and unique. That's not typical at all.
Okay. All right.
Every year, the process ordinarily goes through the UNHCR to the State Department, as I said, then to the voluntary agencies and on down to where they finally get settled. But the UNHCR is the first screening authority, and they're the ones that set up refugee camps, typically, you know, in and around war zones or natural disaster zones, too, places,
mm-hmm.
Typhoons, hurricanes, what have you. The UN sets up the camps, and then the UN screens the people. Number one, do they want to be resettled? Number two, can they be resettled? Number three, is there a place that will take them? The UN does all that. Then the UN contracts with each country, in our case with the Department of State, each year, and we tell the United Nations, per the U.S. Congress, they're the ones that set these limits, we'll take 45,000 this year.
Okay, but
after the UN screening process is done, then the United States does a screening process.
Okay.
Through the State Department.
Okay, that was my question. Is the United States doing any screening prior?
Oh, yes, of course.
Okay.
Yes. It's
all
just
right.
Not up to the standards that we would like to see.
Right. Okay. Well, that makes a little more sense then. I thought maybe the UN was doing the screening and then shipping them over, and then we get what we get.
Oh,
so,
no.
Okay.
No, not like that.
All right.
Okay, so Lyle, you've been pretty quiet. You have 1 minute to dissent.
Well, I love Claire as my sister, but
uh-oh,
I disagree.
That's never good. That's never good.
Well, because
I don't mean to offend.
They don't.
No offense.
Claire's not going to talk to me after the show today. I know.
Nice.
But they don't know where these immigrants are coming from. They can't go back and say they went to XYZ school or were born in XYZ hospital in
that's
Sri Lanka.
True. No records.
They don't know. Huh?
Yeah, no records. That's always been the problem.
No, there's no records. I agree with her that the UN does screen them based on the criteria she outlined. But when you get down below all of that, they don't know who the heck these people are, where they came from, and anything else. But I mean, we're seeing that just from Mexico, just Mexico, just south of us, that these people are coming up through the coyotes. There's no records. There's no background on that.
Right.
Well, I just think it's weird.
We're talking about different categories of people here. So when refugees come in through the United Nations, Lyle's absolutely right. In a lot of cases, like these war zones, these are people that maybe fled their homes with nothing but the clothing on their backs. They don't have documents. They don't have the UN doesn't have the ability to do police checks. I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to call up the police chief of Aleppo and say, can you please check up on, you know, XYZ refugees' records? No, that's impossible. It's not done. So the UN takes between a year and 2 years to screen and to vet every candidate for refugee resettlement status. But you know, in the end, it's not a sure thing, you know, where they come from or who they are and all of that. They do go through some health screening, supposedly, and all of that. But the other categories of people that we're talking about, like those coming across the southern border, those aren't refugees. Those are economic migrants. They're illegals. Yeah. These are not refugees at all, and they're not coming in through that system. They're crossing the border illegally. They're criminally crossing the border without the right to do so. And so those are illegal aliens. That's a different category.
I think it's kind of weird,
even from that, you've got what we take in on an annual basis of ordinary immigrants, regular
right.
immigrants coming through a legal process of application abroad, through a U.S. consulate abroad someplace, perhaps, you know, on family basis, they've got a brother, a sister, an aunt, or whatever in the United States, and that process can take 5, 8, 10 years to get through that process. So there's different categories, but overall, we're taking in probably around 1 million people per year overall.
Wow. Well, I just think it's interesting that these people that are coming from the Middle East all happen to be fighting-age men. It's amazing. The people that are all running away from the fighting are all fighting-age men. That just seems to be kind of an odd little truism there. We have to take one
Excellent point.
Break here, and then we'll be back with the Lopez versus Dr. Lyle Rapacki bout. And we'll, you know, at the sound of the bell, you will hear them going at it again. You're listening to We the People. Join us online. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
There you have it. And at the sound of the bell, as I promised. Okay, so Claire, I'm curious from you. Why does it seem that from the Middle East they're all fleeing, you know, conflict, but these are military age people? And how does that work?
Well, when we're talking about the flow into Europe, that's the demographic we see. Those from that area of conflict brought in through refugee resettlement channels into the United States more often comprise families, mothers, fathers, children.
Mm-hmm.
But that huge flow up into Europe of 2015 and on into 2016 and even now, that flow was the fighting age Muslim men, and you know that's why we call it a hijra. It was obviously an invasion
of what looked like an army. And, of course, given the generous policies of some of these countries, like Germany, each one of those guys is eventually going to petition for his family to join him, which could be under the rules, the laws of Islam, one, two, three, or four wives and all their children, who will all then be thrown onto the welfare, the very generous welfare systems of these Western European countries. You know, that's why they're having second thoughts. I mean, the whole situation, even apart from the massive wave of crime, knifing, stabbings, vehicle jihad, the rapes and all of that, is the economic cost.
It's just amazing.
Here it's different. Those coming through the refugee resettlement program, the United Nations, typically involve families.
Yeah, but here's one. A Maine man, is a guy from Maine, the state of Maine, is dead after his head was smashed in with a brick by a gang of Somali teens near Lewiston Park. My daughter has a house in Lewiston. It's a small town in Maine. And yet you have a Somali gang bashing someone's head in?
Yeah, for whatever reason, the city leadership of Lewiston, without the permission, without the input, without the okay of the citizens of Lewiston, allowed refugee resettlement groups to bring in hordes of Somalis who, among all refugees, seem to assimilate among the most poorly. This gang went running amok in a park. That's the story that you're reading there.
There should be outrage over that.
But I guess people wouldn't know because apparently the Lewiston Sun Journal hinted that there's a racial component, but it says here, incredibly never mentioned the S word, Somali.
They're just teens.
We're just teens.
Just American
teens.
Yeah,
I mean, the people there who live there, they know. They know what's going on.
Correct.
But, you know, Lyle was talking earlier in the program about government by consent of the governed, that the job, the duty of government in the United States is conceived of by the founders anyway, is that government exists to defend the natural rights, the natural law, the natural rights of the people. That's their sole job. That is the only job of government, to uphold and defend the rights the people already have. And obviously in Lewiston, that's not quite the way it turned out.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, and it's not just Lewiston. I mean, there's a lot of communities that are being pretty much overrun, and we're just kind of taking a back seat and letting it happen. I don't understand.
Are you guys seeing our country, at the national level from a policy standpoint, not congressional action, but just, you know, State Department, that kind of thing? Are we taking a look at this? Are we reevaluating some of this or no?
Well, there actually are members of Congress who've attempted to. I would name Brian Babin, representative from Texas. I don't think he's your representative, Lyle, but he's down there in Texas.
Right.
He introduced a bill some years ago now, basically to hit the pause button on refugee resettlement until we reform the whole process. That bill languishes to this day. People like Scott Perry, representative from the Gettysburg area of Pennsylvania, likewise introduced a similar bill, hit the pause button. Let's rework this whole refugee resettlement and immigration policy. That, too, languishes. So even when they try in Congress, those who do are stymied. And, you know, this has to be action of Congress because we're talking about federal law that governs these things.
Right.
I think that's one of the reasons the Patriot Caucus has stood up against Paul Ryan, and now Paul Ryan is on the ropes because they're looking at ousting him as Speaker. Because of what Claire just described, he's stymieing valid legislation to bring back some order into our immigration policies. You know, just a closing thought here on something. This whole business of chain migration, where these kids are coming in and they're separating them from their parents, and how bad that is, and woo, woo, woo. You know, a lot of these kids are not even related to the quote-unquote parents that are with them. What happens, and it's well known and documented, that parents in the home country will entrust their minor children to criminal human trafficking gangs and or surrogates to get them into the United States. And once they're here, these kids are here, and they're reparated, then they can go ahead and bring the parents in. And so the parents are trusting, hoping that their minor children somehow will get in here and get established.
Because it's easier for the kids to get established than it is if the adults come.
Because they don't want to entertain
for the kids. And it's also more emotional and more heartfelt. You know, we've got some little 12-year-old that's marched across the desert for the last 20 days or something. And while there is an emotional component, I'm not immune to that. And the fact of the matter is, this is a setup. We're being played, and I think until the citizens really begin to stand up and demand, not request, demand some answers from their local city council, county supervisors, state legislators, I don't really see a whole lot changing. But I think what's happening is Mr. Trump has gone ahead and begun to give some voice to the citizens and even to a few people who are now starting to run for office. So I hope that continues.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. Well, we have a lot of potential topics we can tackle on subsequent visits. We did pretty good for no plan, actually. We did well.
Yeah, this was very good.
and we appreciate your input. Anything, any final thoughts? We got, like, you know, what, like a minute?
Yeah, I hope Claire will still talk to me after the show.
No, it's too late. Charity messaged me. Lyle's dead.
You're dead to her, Lyle. Sorry.
She's all, WTF,
no,
what's Lyle doing
Claire
on here?
I give gray hair at times.
Gosh.
Well, we do appreciate both of you coming on. It's been a great show.
We're just excited that Lyle was willing to come on and just pretty much take the heat because, you know, somebody had it. It was either Lyle or Bill. And Bill's like, can we get Lyle on?
Yeah.
Because this is not good.
Yeah, come on. It's Father's Day.
Go ahead. Set Lyle up. He'll go for it. Sure. I'm not doing anything next weekend if you need another paper mache.
Hey, I got your number, Lyle.
I'm available.
Hey, we're talking about population control next week with a Canadian, so. You know, actually, that topic and this topic, I don't know, got an odd component there of similarity in a weird way. All right, so Dr. Lyle Rapacki.
Thank you, guys.
And Claire Lopez, thank you so much for coming on with us. We totally appreciate you guys.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Thank you all for having me, and Lyle for having me, too, and putting up with me.
we appreciate you guys having fun, because the topic is kind of frustrating, so if we don't goof around a little bit, people are freaking out. So thanks a lot, and happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. We will see you next week. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.